Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inner Voice Intuitive Hour with your host, Jenny Seek.
Hi, folks. This is Jenny Seek, and this is your weekly forum for connecting with your intuitive process, all things metaphysical, and honoring and recognizing your soul self. Thanks for tuning in, and enjoy the ride.
Hi there, everybody. Thanks so much for listening to Inner Voice Intuitive Hour this evening. This is a show for folks who are interested in the crossover between depth psychology, working with archetypes, and working with understanding your unconscious and bringing it into the light of day, and understanding your intuition and understanding how your inner voice speaks to you to craft a life that is authentically your own. So if those topics are of interest to you, you're in the right place. I encourage you to check out the archives. There are about 2 years of back shows, everything from chakras to working with shadow energies to tarot, just all sorts of goodies back there. So take a look at the archives, and you can listen to those anytime that you would like to. Also, I encourage you to share your picture and to follow the show so that you'll know when the shows are, and also check out the other broadcasts on With Insight Radio as well. We have a great lineup of folks who are really interested in making your life a richer experience. So I encourage you to check out With Insights Radio and Inner Voice Intuitive Hour. Next week, I will have Pamela Steele on Inner Voice Intuitive Hour. And Pamela Steele is a tarot card creator. She created a beautiful deck called the Steel Wizard Deck, which I have a copy of, which she's broadened the major arcana to include four different symbols that are specific to her deck, and it's just a wonderful way to work. I want to encourage you to check out Deck Creators on Facebook. There's over 709 people on that page now, and every day I go back there and see so many more deck creators who are sharing their work there. So that's a really great way to get in touch with other folks who are into intuitive tarot and tarot reading. And I also encourage you to check out Roxy Sims and Pamela Steele's blog webinars on creating a tarot deck. So they're going to take you through, and I'm not sure when this was here, so I'm not sure what the dates are, but if it's run through the sequence, they'll be doing it again, I'm sure. But they're doing a webinar on how to create your own deck, everything from the creative process and tapping that and getting in tune with your own creativity and your own intuition to how to market your deck and how to find folks who connect with your own unique symbolism. So I encourage you to check out Global Spiritual Studies. Next week, Pamela Steele will be on the show talking more about all of the wonderful projects she's doing with the Tarot. So that is what's coming up. And today I have Melissa LaFlame. Melissa is a depth psychotherapist out of the Denver area. And Melissa's been on the show before. We've had some really wonderful conversations. And are you there, Melissa?
Hi, Jenny. Yes, hi.
Hi. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great, thanks. How about you?
Good. Good, good. Pretty busy day, but very good. So so glad that you're here. Sounds like it on your end as well.
A bit.
So glad that you're here. And
thank you.
In the listening audience, if you can just explain how you work as a depth psychotherapist and what that entails for you in your practice and with your clients.
Sure. I'll talk about it more, I think, from the point of view of the client, like what it's like to be a client.
Awesome.
Working through life's conundrums at a depth level. I've been a client of depth psychotherapy myself for years and years, so I have a pretty good feel. So what that means is that for the most part, we pay more, if not almost entirely attention to what is going on beneath the surface. So what is otherwise unconscious, what is maybe at play in your life, in your world, that is disturbing or even incredibly attractive, mm-hmm. compelling, maybe even repulsive, mm-hmm. gut-wrenching. We take a look at what is really alive for you at any given moment on any given day in any given session. And attempt to go, you know, deeper and deeper into what is brought up. So, meaning when someone comes in and I haven't seen them in a week or two, I don't refer to my notes and attempt to pick back up where we left off, because that's just not how our lives work, and that's not how psyche works. So we will look at whatever is most present for you, for someone, when they sit down and begin to look inward each time we meet. Now, that's not to say that I don't pay attention to what I'm tracking with each individual. I do pay attention to themes and always try to tie back what's brought up within each session to previous sessions and to, you know, images and to feelings and to certainly archetypes too, that are presented along the way. And often I'll work with somebody for anywhere from months to years. So
a very different model than traditional psychotherapy to work so long.
Yes. Yes, because and that is not the case with most people, you know, or most clients that I see. Most are in therapy for a matter of months. The majority for somewhere around a year, year and a half. But, I mean, these are people who are coming in to see me understanding that we're going to work at a depth level, that we're not just going to look at their, quote-unquote, you know, symptoms and handle those and then expect that they'll move back into life and everything will be resolved. That's just not how it goes.
Yeah, I love that.
Right?
The fact that you're noticing the fluidity of the process, you know, like sometimes
right.
It's so important to bring up what's right on the surface, and sometimes it's important to notice those themes and kind of double back. And I think that is how, you know, how psyche shows up, and that's wonderful that it's such a fluid process, and I think that would encourage them to be more fluid in their own process as well, that you hear it that way.
Yeah, really honoring, you know, what is coming up without regard for what we might think is supposed to be going on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you this. I intentionally look for where the darkest dark might be. I intentionally look for where the most charged emotion is.
Okay.
And I will enter that with the client.
Awesome.
I won't push, because it's just not how I'm trained and it's just not how I am.
Mm-hmm.
But I certainly will, you know, walk toward the dark with a client. I certainly will enter right into what I think is most painful. And when I feel resistance, and Jenny, you probably remember from graduate school. Jenny and I went to the same graduate school, Pacifica Graduate Institute. And
the
you probably remember. I mean,
life.
We were, and we were trained to really respect, you know, people's resistance. We were really trained to respect when someone either implies or says no.
Yeah, exactly.
It's actually, it's just so important. It's important in our everyday lives, but it's really important.
It's important for them to feel like they're leading the session, that they're leading the process, so that
yes, very much so.
It shows up the way that they need for it to show up. I really appreciate your awareness of wanting to go to that darker place, but then honoring the resistance. I think that's so important with a client. And I think, too, and I'll bet you notice this as well, that you can notice that deeper content, but not go there for a while. Just kind of hold that
right.
for the client, hold that awareness and
right.
and see how it shows up.
Yes, very much. People often want to know, you know, at the very beginning they ask, how do you do this? what is your approach? And when someone's pretty new to therapy, one of the things that I try to explain is that I will consciously pace the rate we will go deep and the depth we will go. I attempt to consciously pace that. And then sometimes the unconscious, the movement of psyche will just intervene, and then we all, you know, grab our seatbelts and slap them on,
mm-hmm.
and helmets,
mm-hmm.
and off we go.
Yeah.
Because that's just how it goes, especially when somebody's really ready to delve into some of the pain that they've been experiencing and really try to uncover what's at the root of it. Because without doing that, the pain is just going to recur.
Right, exactly, exactly.
Yeah. So does
awesome.
This address your question, Jen?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay, good,
absolutely.
Good.
Yeah. I think it's so important, too, to just, you know, take the lead from the client so that that process is done so differently with each person. And I think that you're talking about that as well.
Yes. Every session with every client is really quite different. Really quite
sure.
different. I follow more than I guide, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I follow at maybe about a half pace behind, but I do follow. And I'm not only following the client, but I'm following psyche.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how stuff is showing up. What do you mean by following psyche specifically?
What I pay attention to is when the client's telling a story or describing something they've been through, describing how they've been feeling. What I try to pay most attention to is, and the way we talk about it, in the field is images, right? So
mm-hmm.
I try to pay attention to the images that the client presents. Images meaning anything along the lines of what they're feeling, so their emotions. Images
mm-hmm.
along the lines of their gestures.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly I pay attention to what archetypes may be present in what they're going through. I also pay attention to the way they speak. So often people speak in, you know, idiomatic expressions, and there's metaphor there, there's symbology. And I really pay attention to that. So I listen probably with more of the ear of a poet,
mm-hmm.
way more the ear of a poet than a scientist. I'm not a scientist.
mm-hmm.
And so that then allows what's more so beneath the surface to present itself. The theory is that when we listen that way, kind of like with softer ears, more
third ear. Sometimes it's called listening with a third ear.
Third ear, yes. And wouldn't that'd be cool, wouldn't it? I wonder where that third ear would be.
I love that phrase.
Hopefully, not blocking the third eye.
Exactly.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that's what I mean by that.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's not always easy to explain to a client when they will ask me that, and sometimes I do get strange looks, you know. But that's
mm-hmm.
okay. I'm
yeah.
I'm used to getting strange looks.
Well, and you're helping them trust their process more, so it's okay to be a little strange or out of the box or to listen more closely, and that's great to
right.
model that for them, I think.
Right, right. Really coming from a deeply instinctual place.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think, too, it might be important to kind of flesh out this word archetype. It's one
mm-hmm.
that people throw around a lot, and it's not one that a lot of people understand. It's kind of clouded in mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And so how would you describe an archetype? What does that mean to you, Melissa?
Sure. Well, I'm gonna paraphrase both Carl Jung and James Hillman on that. So, So an archetype is it's an energetic pattern that is imbued with emotion, and it's a pattern of energy that cuts across time and culture. And yet, even as I say, it cuts across time and culture, it definitely cuts across time. An archetype can be certainly influenced, though, by its culture and shifted somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the most important things to remember about when we call something an archetype, like, for instance, a hero is an archetype. Hero is an archetype. There's a certain it's almost like the archetype of hero is wrapped in certain emotion, in a certain sensibility.
Mm-hmm.
And emotion and sensibility that all peoples across all times can connect with. So that's the universal or the overarching archetypal essence of archetype.
Very cool.
Yeah, and Hillman also says that an archetype is alive. It is much more of a verb than a noun.
Mm-hmm.
So to think of it as, when you feel the presence of an archetype in your life, I'll be personal here because that's always more interesting, right?
Sure.
Wild woman, woman as in wilderness. Wilderness is also an archetype. Wild as an instinctual, to look at how is that charged with emotion? What does that bring alive in me?
Mm-hmm.
Into what parts of me does that archetypal energy take me? And what is the light side of that? That is, what is the aspect of that that I'm happy to enter at any moment and have it enter me? And what is the shadow side of that? The shadow side meaning the aspect of that archetype that I have yet to fully own or that I have resisted maybe find unappealing or, that just gets back to having yet fully owned.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Does that make sense? Yeah?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. That it's this energy that's cross-cultural, that it's something that we push away from or move into or notice or ignore. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
that whatever
yeah.
is in the room is the energy of that. Theme or that,
yes.
I think feeling toned complex is a word that comes to the fore when I think about it. You know that
yes.
like whole energy that's loaded. Absolutely, yeah.
Yes.
Great.
Well, and since you said that word complex,
mm-hmm. yeah, I'm writing about it right now.
Are you? Yeah. So anytime there's a complex, you know, present in your life, like father complex, mother complex, guilt complex, those complexes are infused with archetypal energy. So like father is an archetype, mother is an archetype. Guilt is, it's probably an archetype, yeah. It does cut across time and culture, doesn't it? And so those complexes are infused with archetypal energy, and so to better understand what's going on for you with that complex, with how it affects your life, really understanding, or it's not so much understanding, but it's really engaging with and relating with that archetypal energy, like doing journaling that allows you to dialogue with the archetypal father energy, which can be found in most major religions, that archetypal father energy, to develop a dialogue, to ask questions of that energy, and which, of course, is within all of us.
Right.
And journal it out, develop the relationship, and come to understand a bit more about what's going on in your day-to-day life.
So would you say that when you work with that complex stuff, Melissa, that what happens is the more that people start to engage it, the less it impacts in their life in a, like a triggered way, like the more that they're able to contain some of the energy and go into it with it being less loaded, I would say?
Yeah, I would say that, Jen. I'm with you like 90% of that. I don't think that we can contain that energy. I think that we can certainly dialogue with it and come into an intimate relationship with it. And when we've come into an intimate relationship with it, then it's far less likely to kick us in the ass.
Right. Right. I think that's what I mean by contain. Like,
yes.
Just so that we can handle
right.
it better.
Yes.
We can kind
yes.
of get around it and not
yes.
have it lead us, kind of thing, is what I mean by contain. But
yeah, definitely.
Awesome. Cool. So would you say that, like, these complexes get triggered when we experience something like the journey to the underworld or, you know, the soul's descent, that whole theme of getting engulfed or overwhelmed with certain aspects of a thing?
Well, you know, what I've gathered is that it's often a confrontation with some of our deepest, you know, most entrenched, gut-wrenching difficulties that land us sort of in the lap of a complex and facing down archetypal energy, trying to wrestle it rather than trying to relate with it, that does land us in a dark night of the soul.
Yeah, yeah. I always say that noticing it is so important, but not to go into it too deeply, because sometimes when you go into it too deeply, you kind of get caught there in that place of projection or that place where it's more loaded than it needed to be, you know?
Yeah, do you mean the archetype itself or
experience of the complex, so that instead of like meeting it head on and charging forward like a hero would, right, more like just being curious about it and walking around it and noticing how it functions for you, so that you don't go full throttle into it, because sometimes when you go full throttle into it, you kind of lose your grounding and your footing, you know.
Well, I'm glad you said that. because my point of view is a bit different, and my point of view has evolved over time. So it's this, that We have to be willing to enter it fully.
Mm-hmm.
Enter the darkness, enter the complex, archetypally charged places, meaning mm-hmm. our deepest wounds, the places
right.
where we're most scared to go, that we really have to be willing to enter them fully, not knowing where the hell we're going, or maybe perhaps embracing that we are consciously choosing to descend into a place that at first is going to feel a lot like hell,
mm-hmm.
but a hell that we have our eyes open in. Because
mm-hmm. That's a great way to say it.
Yeah, because we've consciously chosen to descend and to look at our deepest, darkest stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Versus resisting taking the descent into our deepest, most painful
right.
stuff. Because when we resist and when these issues have to be resolved, yeah, they find us and they grab us by the hair and they drag
right.
us down there.
Right.
And
right.
I have done it both ways. I've
mm-hmm.
been dragged down, and I've consciously chosen to go down.
Mm-hmm.
one is only just a little bit better than the other.
uh-huh.
In terms of its difficulty, in terms of what confronting our own unconscious, what confronting our own darkest stuff means to us.
Uh-huh.
It's all difficult, and yet without it, we only live kind of a half-life.
Right, right. I think, though, that I do understand what you're saying about, like, just knowing that you're going to take a nosedive and plunge in and go to the bottom and not know where the dark is and, you know,
yeah.
kind of find your way out toward the light. And
mm-hmm.
and I've had that experience many times, and it used to always totally freak me out. And now I just go, oh, I know what this is. Okay, here
yeah.
we go. You know, kind of thing.
Right.
And that's a great thing to do. I guess what I'm referring to is the idea of the complex, though, is being so dense and so loaded for some folks, so much projective content, so much tendency to project onto situations or not be grounded, that
mm-hmm.
sometimes that descent, I guess, maybe needs to be, cushioned, I guess, is what I'm saying. Do you know what I mean? Like,
well, yeah, I do. I think I know what you're alluding to. So I'll throw this out there.
Sure.
Taking a descent, taking a conscious descent into what's most painful
mm-hmm.
Is not something we do without a great deal of preparation, you know?
Yes.
Like, you wouldn't head into the wilderness, and I mean real wilderness, not just the
right.
fringes of the state park.
you
wouldn't head into the wilderness without preparation. And many of us wouldn't head into the wilderness without a guide.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, back to the sort of the unfolding of a psychotherapy process, when I walk with someone into a descent, when I actually, and at that point, if that's happening, then I am leading the way. I am about a half a step ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes they're actually right alongside me. But, so if what you're saying is we've got to kind of take it one step at a time and take it a bit easy with getting down into some of these really emotionally charged, very difficult areas of our psyches and what it is that we're struggling with, you know, like in the case of a really difficult relationship with a parent, that's presented itself in difficult relationship with other people, other significant others. When somebody wants to explore what really is going on there, it's kind of like walking into the belly of the whale. It's a it's a big deal, and you just don't you don't dive in without preparation. So I'm just kind of working that metaphor over and over again. But am I with you?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. So for folks who don't know what it is, what is the underworld journey? What is the dark night of the soul? What's it feel like? What's it, what are the components of it?
Yeah, so...
an expansive question.
Well, it usually begins with some inklings that your day in and day out life is just not the way you want it to be. Meaning you feel either drained of energy or too ramped up. Your relationships are not happening the way you'd like them to be. They don't feel supportive enough, loving enough, alive enough. You yourself don't feel alive enough. And you begin to get the hint that perhaps something on a deeper level is beckoning you. So there is a call, like a beckoning, to begin to explore what's going on within you at a deeper level. And to answer that call, and it's very much like Joseph Campbell talks about when the hero answers the call to begin the adventure of the journey. Answering that call means, and that's if this is consciously done, right? And for most of us, a descent in, into the underworld, into our darkness, a conscious choice to sit in the depression and work with it does not happen often, that that conscious choice. It's usually that we do get dragged there, meaning that the depression will get so big that it will just kind of knock the energy right out of us, or perhaps even bring about a suicide attempt or overwhelming suicidal thoughts. Or perhaps a major relationship explodes and ends. That, or the loss of a loved one, the loss of a loved job, or the loss of a job, major losses, or sometimes even any kind of loss, depending on where someone's at and how they're feeling. Can take someone down, and that's really where the phrase comes from. Can take someone down into the underworld, into that sense of, oh my God, I am in hell.
Right, I can't stay here anymore. Like I just can't be here.
Yes, and then, quite honestly, that's when I see people enter therapy in my practice, is when they have hit that wall. Or when they have hit bottom, or when they've hit their own bottom. And oftentimes actually just before they have hit bottom. And then, you know, once we're in that place of, really it's a place of suffering. It's a place of, great grief, and yet a very, very human place. So once someone finds themselves there, then, as James Hillman would say, the major work is to be in it.
To let yourself be there. Yeah.
Yes, to really let yourself be in it. To feel your feelings deeply. And often, what does that involve? That involves really letting yourself cry it out. It involves being really gentle with yourself, recognizing that you haven't failed at all, but in fact you're coming into an even deeper sense of your own humanity. It's deeply human to hit bottom, to skulk around in the dark, you know, dank places. It's deeply human. We just are so far removed from those experiences in our everyday lives, you know. We don't, we hardly even have to go outside anymore.
So, well, I think we judge them, too. Like, we have all these judgments about ourselves when we are in those places.
Yeah, good,
so we don't
allow
ourselves to just be there, you know.
Right, yes. Yes. Yeah, and really allowing ourselves to be there is really allowing yourself, like as if you invite yourself on a retreat into your own soul. And I know it's hard. I know it's hard when people certainly have, you know, work and children and partners and what have you. And yet, if it's held off, if we don't answer that call, it will not go away.
Well, in my experience with it and with clients too is that over time it gets deeper and more entrenched if we don't look at it, you know.
Yeah.
It finds us in it, comes back kind of in a rhythmic kind of way at another stage in our life and asks to be seen again.
Yeah, definitely, Jenny. Asks, demands to be seen again. In fact, shows up the next time monstrously.
Yeah, you're right.
yeah, I'm not a big fan of the monsters. And when they show up, there are no words exchanged. It's you know, we just get dragged down. So let me read a bit of a poem.
Sure.
About the darkness.
Sure.
And this is an excerpt of a poem by David White. The name of the poem is Sweet Darkness. And I'm finding the poem on page 52 of a book I've been reading for a while called Soulcraft, Crossing into the Mysteries of Nature and Psyche by Bill Plotkin.
I read that. It's wonderful.
Yeah, did you? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good, huh? Yeah. So I'm going to read a paragraph to introduce the poem and then the poem. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
When the knock on the door arrives, you're being asked to descend into psycho-spiritual darkness, the night world of mysteries, the womb of true character. Poet David White describes this moment in the intimate voice with which a wise and caring elder might speak to a frightened initiate. David White writes, "Time to go into the dark where the night has eyes to recognize its own. There you can be sure you are not beyond love. The dark will be your womb tonight. The night will give you a horizon further than you can see. You must learn one thing. The world was made to be free in. Give up all the other worlds except the one to which you belong. Sometimes it takes darkness and the sweet confinement of your aloneness to learn anything or anyone that does not bring you alive is too small for you."
Awesome.
Yeah, that's good. Huh? Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. And I know when I've shared this with clients, this poem, and when I've read it myself, there's one line that stands out for me of late. And it's funny, when I read this poem maybe like 5 years ago, a different part of the poem stood out for me. But the line that stands out for me now is, "The dark will be your womb tonight." I just find that very soothing. And perhaps a good thing for people to remember is that when we stop resisting, you know, and we allow ourselves to be it like in a room with the lights off, when we just stop resisting and we allow ourselves to have a relationship with our own feelings, our own heart, our own sadness and loss and so on, that it's not that bad.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Really. In fact, it's quite rich. It is where all the great poetry comes from.
Mm-hmm.
It is where all the great music comes from. Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Some definitely does come from joy. Absolutely. Absolutely. But we're not talking about that right now.
Right. Yeah. I really appreciate what you're saying about, you know, when you quit resisting it and you just allow it to be in your space and you allow yourself to feel it, there's a synthesis that happens. There's
mm-hmm.
there's a connection that happens with a larger part of yourself, so that you
yes.
can kind of care for yourself there in a way that you haven't allowed yourself to maybe before when
yes.
you're in that place of judgment.
Yes, definitely. And that, you know, that allowing yourself to really care for yourself as if you would your own child
mm-hmm.
is in and of itself so healing. It's just so healing to be received by yourself
yeah.
for as delicate and as vulnerable as you are.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And especially for someone who hasn't had the experience of allowing themselves to feel their feelings. You know, maybe you grew up in a family where
sure.
it was do-do-do or whatever kind of thing like that, and there was no
mm-hmm.
way to have a mirror or a model for that experience of just, you know, experiencing your pain and feeling your sadness.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, it occurs to me that a lot of these themes that we're talking about are very shamanic, you know, that when I think about
uh-huh.
a shamanic journey of
yes.
going down to the underworld and embracing
right.
That deep, primal, instinctual part of ourselves,
yes.
and that we have to stay there for a time before we can come back up.
Yes.
And yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. What we're talking about here really is rooted in practices of indigenous cultures. It's really rooted. It's really rooted in the wisdom ways. You know,
yeah.
Much more so than in Western psychology.
Yeah.
Though
yeah.
we know James Hillman did bring this approach forward.
Mm-hmm.
But depth psychology alone does not address what we're talking about, what we've been talking about in the last 20 minutes.
Right.
You know,
there's a wonderful book called Thresholds of Initiation by Joseph Henderson that talks about the stages of the descent.
Mm.
And it's really a powerful thing about how something has to dissolve before something new can be birthed. So there's this separation
yes.
that has
yes.
to happen before
yes.
there's unity. And I think that that's kind of what we're talking about.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. In fact, the way Bill Plotkin talks about it in his book Soulcraft is once the call is answered to go on a descent into the depths of your soul,
mm-hmm.
to really get a sense of what's going on there, the first step is severance, meaning to sever or to end old ways of being
mm-hmm.
that no longer serve you, and relationships that no longer serve you. And that's some tough stuff.
Yeah.
But anybody who's been walking the planet for a while, I'm sure knows what we're talking about here. I mean, there are just some ways of being that, you know, like maybe someone's been drinking more than they want to be drinking, or they've been finding themselves arguing with their coworkers and very unhappy at work and realizing that they may have to, you know, sever those relationships and leave that work and that job and so on, or certainly end a relationship or end a marriage, and sometimes sever relationships with siblings or parents. I mean, this is tough stuff, and sometimes that's necessary. So the first step is the severance. The second piece is the initiation, is really going on that descent into the underworld.
Do you think that there's a way to sever the investment with the relationship or with the situation before you actually sever it? You know what I mean? Like, so that you prepare someone for that process of severing the relationship or severing, you know, the actual
Literal. I mean,
yeah.
It just depends. Mm-hmm. My experience with clients over the last 10 years or so and my own experience is mm-hmm. it just depends. There mm-hmm. are some relationships, and we're mostly talking intimate relationships, not necessarily romantic relationships, but often romantic relationships. But
sure.
some of them just really need to be completely severed, and there's usually conversation, and then a severance, and then some others don't need to be completely severed, but the way we were behaving in that relationship needs to end. So, and in fact, if a relationship is severed, but the way we were behaving in that relationship that didn't work for us. If we continue mm-hmm. to behave that way, then
right.
we're just going to end up in the same boat.
Right.
So, but yeah, I mean, you brought up shamanism, and, you know, sometimes there are ways, and there are times to be graceful, and then there are times to not be.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Often what we're talking about is messy, and it's painful.
Right.
These aren't your run-of-the-mill social interactions, you know.
mm-hmm.
Often people feel as though their lives are on the line, you know, right?
Right. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, so there's, just to finish up Plotkin's model, there's severance,
oh, sure, yeah.
And then there's initiation, taking the descent, the initiatory descent down into... Yes, the depths of your being, spending time alone, and this particular psychologist and writer, Bill Plotkin, his work is done with people in the wilderness,
mm-hmm.
And that's where the initiatory experiences take place. So. Very much along the lines of the practices of indigenous peoples and
mm-hmm.
Some modern-day shamanic methods. And then after initiation, Joseph Campbell talks about it as the return, and I can't remember Plotkin's word. There's severance, initiation, and, well, let's say the return. So the identifying of what it is that is your particular soul's gift
mm-hmm.
and a sense of what your soul's service to the world is. And
right.
and how you go about delivering that service to the world, but before you look at how you're going to deliver that service to the world, you look at your own relationship with your soul's gift, your
sure.
own essence, your soul's essence, mm-hmm. and that is discovered. That is discovered on the descent in the midst of that initiation.
Mm-hmm.
So that usually brings about transformation, and at the same time, it does, that kind of work does require us to continue, you know, on the path of paying attention to what is going on within us at a deep level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. I think, too, you know, a lot of the reason why it is so messy, I mean, I think that what you're talking about is messy by default. I mean, it is going to be messy stuff, but it also mm-hmm. is messy because we don't have models for it being okay to be messy and come out, you know, the way we need to come out, you know. We kind
yeah.
of walk around and try to make everything so neat and so, you know, concise and so regulated. And sometimes the end, the abrupt end of something that needs to end isn't that way and isn't going to be that way. So a lot of, I
right.
think, what you're doing is preparing people for
right.
what that might really look like so that it's okay that it's messy, but we do it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, this... Really, if we are honest with ourselves and we muster up the courage to look at our own dark stuff, including aspects of our relationships that are dark and not working, then there's no way that it can be anything but messy,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
It's not going to be tidy.
Right.
And it's going to be uncomfortable.
Right.
But... one of the things I find myself saying is, do you imagine you're going to feel more uncomfortable if you address this than you do now?
mm-hmm.
And invariably someone will say, no, I don't think so. I
mm-hmm.
don't think I will be more uncomfortable if I actually address this and this gets, like, authentically messy, you know?
Right, right.
So, yeah. I hope that's not too vague, but...
No.
Yeah.
No. But I think, too, when we're talking about, like, a nature-based indigenous culture, a shamanic model,
uh-huh.
and a kind of a wisdom tradition, you think of the wise woman archetype, and so many of those kinds of illustrations or presentations or metaphors are very, very abrupt and very, very in your face and very visceral.
Yes.
And I
yeah.
think that if we had a model in our culture for it being okay, for it being that unneat, people would be able to make these really, you know, large transitions in their life, these separations and these ascents, more easily than they do. I don't know, but I wonder about that myself.
Yeah, you mean if we had more models for, you know, being real, being real, being spontaneous, speaking from
yeah.
the heart, not worrying about
yeah.
what the hell it all sounds like.
Right, being mad, being immediate, being
yes.
you know,
yes.
brazen, like whatever that is, you know, whatever
right.
that wild woman archetype is. If we had a way to understand it, I think Michael Mead talks about this kind of an idea as well, you know, that
yes.
that if we had a way to create a ritual out of it and experience it as a positive aspect of the self, then we might not be so belabored with the choices that we're making and kind of, you know, move around
yes.
the periphery of something that kind of is inevitable.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I've got a quote here from Michael Mead. Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you said Michael
Very
Mead.
Cool.
I have a quote here from Sam Keen, but they're...
Oh, we're two.
They're related.
They're on par. Yes.
Oh, yeah, but, you know, Michael Mead is so much about ritual. And, yeah,
yes.
we're missing ritual in
yeah.
in our culture. You know, ritual meaning... consciously created ceremony to
mm-hmm.
help someone
yeah.
enter into this and to feel received and whole and even stutter like I'm stuttering through this, you know,
mm-hmm.
and really not
mm-hmm. absolutely
and really not give a rip. So
Exactly. That's right.
So, yeah, so let me read this Sam Keen quote here. So he says, good men and good women have fire in the belly. We are fierce. Don't mess with us. If you're looking for someone who will always be nice to you, nice gets you a C+ in life. We don't always smile, talk in a soft voice, or engage in indiscriminate hugs. That's one of my favorite lines ever.
That's great.
The loving struggle between the sexes, we thrust and parry. I guess he was talking about relationship between probably men and women. But, yeah, being real, not smiling because we think we ought to be smiling or hugging people we just don't even know or feel any true affection for.
Yeah.
Or let's say we don't know them, but maybe we feel some affection for them anyway. Great, then hug. But
great.
That... But that's sort of, you know, contrived, I am going to be all sweetness and light and see what that can get me out of life. Usually feeling pretty, you know, usually these people feeling
terrible.
Pretty flat.
Yeah.
And does not support an authentic exploration of what's going on at a depth level.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So, well, we definitely took care of that.
yeah, I think that can be a miss. I've often thought in the New Age movement, and I'm going to get in trouble for this, but I guess I don't care, that sometimes
let's get in trouble, Jen. Hello.
We got 4 minutes to do it. But,
oh, no.
But that sometimes that's a misguided kind of a narcissism, you know. It's like everything's going to be neat. Everything's going to be clean and tidy, and I'm going to be, you know, happy and whole and all of this stuff, when really,
right.
Under the surface, I'm just brewing with this, you know, this anger or this frustration or this something that needs to come out.
Right.
And I often feel there's this sterility that is not really authentic. You know, it's like, it's the
right.
trickster archetype. It's like, boom, there
right.
it is. And if you see it, it's like, oh, well, I see that. Well, that makes it even matter. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes. And I think, I think any push to be more quote unquote more positive than negative, any push to be more sweet than tart, or more light than dark, or to imagine that because we observe how we feel, or we sit and meditate and say mantra, that what we've been struggling with is going to evaporate, is all baloney.
Wow. I don't know that I feel the same way about that, but we only
really?
Have... Really?
And we have no time left?
Well, we can do it again. I mean, we can really get into this stuff because I've been thinking about it a lot and experiencing certain facets of it in my life, and I would love to talk about it with you further, but it probably might be a messy conversation, but that's okay with me.
Thank God. Yeah. Thank God.
But I want you to be able to real quickly share where people could get in touch with you for sessions and for work.
Oh, sure. Well, you got to come to Denver. No, I'm kidding. But that would be best. So my office is in Denver, Colorado, in the city. My website is JungianSoulwork.com, and I'll spell it JungianSoulwork.com. JungianSoulwork.com.
Well,
my phone number and my email's there. Oh.
Go on.
Jen?
Go on. You've got 30 seconds. Go on.
Okay, yeah. So my phone number and my email is on my website, and I would be happy to hear from you. So thanks.
Awesome. Very cool. Thanks so much, Melissa. This was a great
conversation.
Thank
you.
And we will do it again.
Great.
Take care.
Good night, y'all.
Have
okay.
a great evening.
You too. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for listening to Inner Voice Intuitive Hour this evening. Have a great evening and go make magic, because that's what we're here for. Feel it, create it, imbibe it, dance it, dream it. That's what we're here for. Take good care, guys. Bye now.